You are listening to On the Daily, the RotoViz Daily Fantasy Sports Podcast, powered by RotoViz Radio.
Hey everyone, I'm Matt Friedman, Matt at the Oracle of Fantasy Labs and RotoViz. Welcome to the September 2nd, 2017 NASCAR edition of On the Daily. I'm joined by Dr. Nick Giffen, an editor at RotoViz, a PhD in mathematics, a three-time qualifier for the DraftKings NASCAR main event, and one of the best NASCAR DFS players in the world. You can follow him on Twitter at RotoDoc. Nick, how's it going?
Hey, Matt, I'm doing awesome. I'm refreshed after that week off, although it's obviously been pretty busy with NFL coming up. But I kind of just got chills when you said, like, three-time qualifier, because the qualifying tournament, like the actual contests that I qualified for, start the weekend after Richmond. So 2 weeks from now, I will be playing my first round of the qualifiers. So, oh man, I didn't even think about that until you said it. I'm excited.
Yeah, you know what's cool? Because they've changed the format. So before, it used to be a one-weekend tournament. Can you actually – we've talked about this before, but can you give people a refresher of how that main event is structured this year?
Yeah, so the format is actually pretty interesting. It is a multi-round format, and – the first round is going to take place at the first race of the Chase. I actually need to look up whatever race that is. But the first round will have 25 qualifiers, 25 entrants. And then from there, they'll whittle the 25 down to 15. And that's going to be at New Hampshire, the first race of the Chase here. So actually in 3 weeks, September 24th. In 3 weeks' time, it'll be New Hampshire Motor Speedway. 25 compete, 15 will advance to the next round, round two. And so if you get eliminated in the first round, you still pocket $2,500, so not a bad payday there. But round two, 15 will go down to 10, and that's at Dover. And if you get eliminated in round two, you pocket $4,000, 10 down to 5 in round three, which is at Charlotte. And then that everybody who gets eliminated in that round will get $6,000. And then the final five compete at Talladega of all races, the wild card of all wild card races.
Oh, man. That's a
boom,
big,
a restrictor play.
That's a big edge.
I know. Well, maybe not against some of these guys, but I think in general, obviously, there's pretty big edge at plate tracks, a lot of game theory and all that. But from there, it's 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, get paid out $10K, $15K, $20,000, $30,000, and $50,000 grand prize. So that's more than they've had a grand prize in the previous years. I think it was 20 or 25K each of the last 2 years. So I'm going big, right? Go big or go home. I want that 50,000. I think obviously with the 25 compete, 15 advance, it's, you play it a little bit like a cash game. More than half the field advances in the first two rounds, and then in the third round, half the field advances. So the goal is to put out a lineup that I think can put up a high floor. But I think I do want maybe a little bit of upside as well. Not a ton, obviously, in the first or second round. But I think in the third round, when it's, you know, a 50-50, I don't necessarily want to play it too safe, because you'll probably get down to the pretty sharp minds there when you're in the last 10. And so the goal there, I think, is not just cash game, but maybe take a small risk here or there to get into Talladega. But we'll see. I mean, we'll have to see how it plays out. Heck, I might not even make the second round because you know, things happen, and if I pick the cash game lineup where all the drivers blow up, they're, you know, not going to make it. But it's a fun format. I'm excited. I still kind of just like the one race thing, though, but this format will do.
Yeah, it's I mean, this is a little bit like Double Up Plus, kind of in the way that you have to think about it. And just to so this is starting, the first race of the playoffs is Chicagoland. And then they're starting the DraftKings tournament the week after that at New Hampshire.
Yeah. So I misspoke when I said that, but it's the second race of the Chase. There.
That's interesting, you know, because still across the tournament, you still get some of the dynamics of, you know, like a second race within the playoffs. You know, people might be pressing a little bit more, and then, you know, it's going to be kind of interesting to take into account how people are approaching this.
Yeah, a ton of dynamics in it, and even just dynamics with the drivers, as you mentioned, especially the Chase drivers, the playoff drivers, I should say. It's no longer called the Chase, but the playoff drivers, because, you know, we come to Dover, that third race of the first round of the playoffs. Well, that's a that's the 15-10 advance, but for the drivers, it's 12 or 16-12 advance, right? So it's kind of similar.
Yeah, it's
similar. An elimination race for the drivers, and it's an elimination race for the DFS guys. It's going to be really interesting to kind of figure out where all the drivers are going into that race, because it might drive some extra kind of psychology and strategy there as well.
Yeah, I like the format. It, I think, prolonged game theory. I think it's cool. Now, one thing, this is a kind of random aside, but so this is Darlington. The next race is Richmond, and that's the final race before the chase, right?
Exactly.
Before the playoffs.
Yep. It's still hard. I mean, yeah. I still call them the St. Louis Rams, so,
The San Diego Chargers.
Yeah, I still think there's 43 cars racing every week, even though there's really like 38, 9, 40 or something. But bad habits aside, yeah, it's Darlington and Richmond, which are two kind of unique tracks. So it's going to be fun to see how these races play out. I know we'll talk about both of those as we do the shows this week and next week, but couldn't really ask for a more exciting end to the regular season. It's going to be – I'm sure these next few races are going to be wild.
Yeah, well, Richmond – I mean, you might not. I'm sure somewhere deep in your memory this is embedded, but you know what Richmond is for this show, right?
I don't. Wait. where is my memory failing me?
Richmond is the first NASCAR show that we did together 2 years ago.
Wow. No way. I didn't even remember that.
Yep.
That's wild.
Yeah, the race right before the chase started. So I think we were doing, I think we did like a run of 10 shows. So we started with Richmond, and then we did the 9 shows of the chase.
That's awesome. Yep. And Richmond's such a fun race because it has a lot of history in terms of controversy around the playoffs as well. We have the old Clint Bowyer intentionally spinning to let his teammate make the chase, and then NASCAR let a 13th car into the chase. That was back when 12 cars made the chase, and NASCAR let Jeff Gordon, the 13th car, in because Michael Waltrip Racing, back when they were a team, it cheated to get Martin Truex Jr. into the chase, and so they allowed Truex into the chase, or I think they disqualified Truex, and they allowed Gordon. It was some wild, weird thing, but there's definitely crazy things can happen at Richmond. So these next few races are going to be insane.
Yeah. So, and I was a little bit wrong there. It's not, there are 10 races in the chase, not 9, but yeah. So anyway, yeah. So Richmond next week, that's our, our sort of like unofficial 2-year anniversary. So anyway, we're going the distance with this show. We're getting into the third stage of the race.
I feel like we need some, what's that band that's like, he's going the distance.
Oh, yeah. He's going for speed. Cake.
Yes. There it is, Cake. I couldn't remember the name of the band. I'm not very good at music.
That's a good album, by the way. Anyway, we're getting far afield of NASCAR, but okay. Nick, it's nice that we had the week off. Let's get back to talking about NASCAR. This week, we are at Darlington, a.k.a. the Lady in Black, according to the outline that you've given me. So it's the final major of the NASCAR season. There's the Southern 500. Darlington is a 1.336-mile egg-shaped, steeply banked oval. First, what is it about Darlington that makes it a special place to race? And then second, what should we expect to see in terms of the racing?
Yeah, so the Lady in Black, and the reason they call Darlington that is because of the famed Darlington Stripe. Darlington is, as you mentioned, with all the adjective there, a steeply banked oval, egg-shaped. It's such a unique track, and the cars always race right around the outside of the track. The fastest way is right near the wall, and some drivers get a little too close to the wall and leave what they call a Darlington stripe, which is where kind of the tire rubs off onto the wall, and you get that big black stripe along it. So sometimes a Darlington stripe isn't necessarily fatal. It doesn't even necessarily harm the car at all. But sometimes it can be a little too much of a kiss to the Lady in Black. And unfortunately, she's not too kind to some of the guys there. So Darlington is just a classic race. They used to race there twice a year, and then they moved down to one race a year. And actually, they were racing back in the spring for a while. They finally moved back to its traditional Labor Day weekend race a couple years ago. And so they've been doing that, and it's kind of become the fourth major of NASCAR's season. So it's just there's such cool history behind it. The reason that it's egg-shaped, they want to do what's called a true oval, which is have the same 180 degree turns at each end of the track, but there was a I think it was a pond that a farmer had that they couldn't encroach upon, so they had to change the shape of the track and made it an egg shaped, and it stayed like that ever since. So a lot of interesting history there. It's also throwback paint scheme weekend, so all the drivers will be – pretty much all of them, not necessarily all, but I think most of the drivers will be having throwback paint schemes to – you know, things like the Miller Lite, the old Miller Lite paint scheme, or different, you know, paint schemes that are throwbacks to NASCAR in the 90s and 80s and stuff like that. So it's a really cool weekend to see all the old paint schemes and just really enjoy some good, hard racing. As far as the racing itself, Darlington, as I mentioned, there's a lot of the Darlington stripe, and so you'll see cars come in, maybe pull out a fender or two if they kind of kiss the wall. It's definitely possible to pass. You can kind of do what they call the slide job, which is where you dive under the driver in front of you and you hope to just kind of slide up in front of him. So we'll hear the term slide job way too many times throughout the race this coming weekend. But yeah, I mean, it's such a cool race. It's a steeply banked track. And so there's just so much speed through the corners, and it's just – I mean, Darlington itself is wild because you can kind of beat and bang there and get away with it, whereas like the traditional 1.5 mile oval, they're so aero-dependent, especially in the 1.5 mile cookie cutters. They're so aero-dependent that if you touch a guy in the rear quarter panel, he's probably going spinning. But at Darlington – you can get away with it sometimes a little bit. Obviously, there will still be wrecks and things like that, and we've seen some pretty big ones at Darlington because the car tends to, especially in the middle of the corner, wash down the track with a high bank. So you could you can definitely get where two cars plow into the outside wall, come back down in front of some of the other cars who are trying to evade it. So you can get mini big ones there, but those aren't too frequent. But the racing is just – it's cool to watch because you can pass there, and I like races where you can pass. There's definitely going to be some tire wear as well. And again, that makes for more passing. So I love it. Darlington's a great race because you can pass.
All right, so a throwback race. Maybe we're going to see some throwback hairdos, some throwback facial hairs, lots of the drivers rocking mustaches, things like that.
Definitely. Actually, if you go to the NASCAR.com homepage right now, as we're recording this, Brad Keselowski is definitely wearing a throwback wig there or something like that, looking like
Please tell me it's like an old...
He actually kind of looks like Napoleon Dynamite. I'm going to take a screen grab of this and put it in our write-up at RotoViz or something, but it's pretty funny.
Yeah, that is very Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah, I think it's cool.
Yeah. Okay, so obviously we're going to talk more about Darlington. Before that, I want to remind you, Nick, not you, but, you know, the listener, that you can get a 30% discount to a special NASCAR pass through our NASCAR podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/NASCAR podcast. With that pass, you get unlimited access to all of Nick's premium NASCAR content, and your subscription supports the pod. Also, if you want some more NASCAR insight from RotoDoc, Nick has some courses at Roto Academy. One of them is a video course with JM to Win of Roto Grinders. You can check those out on Roto Grinders at rotogrinders.com/Roto Academy. Nick, let's talk about Darlington.
Matt, let me jump in here. Yes. I have something very important.
You can
also get a 30% discount to the NFL pass at rotoviz.com/podcast because NFL season is almost here, and many of you have drafts this weekend, and we got a lot of great content at RotoViz NFL content. 30% discount to our season-long pass there as well.
Yeah, that's smart to talk about NFL because it is rapidly approaching. So good call there. Let's talk about Darlington. The race is scheduled for 367 laps. So dominators are at a premium. How many dominators do we typically get at a Darlington race?
Dominators at Darlington. So we usually get two or three. So this is one of those races, unlike some of the 1.5 mile ovals that I've talked about, where we usually would get two dominators more often than not. This one, we can get three dominators. Just things happen at Darlington. You get so many of those Darlington stripes that it can create a lot of cautions. And once you've created a lot of cautions, you can create some randomness. So you can definitely get a number of dominators. Last year, of course, there was really only one major dominator, Kevin Harvick, and then two kind of minor dominators, Brad Keselowski and Kyle Larson, each led about 12 to 13% of the laps. But then you get other years where you get multiple drivers over 15% of the laps led. So if you go back to like 2012, you had a 36%, a 20%, a 15%, and a 12%. So it's kind of all over the place. 2 to 3 is what I would consider the norm. There was a year where there was one dominator, and that was Kevin Harvick back in 2014. But by and large, I'm planning 2 to 3 dominators. It's the most common theme is one dominator and one major dominator and 2 minor dominators is the most common theme I see across the races. There has been kind of a spread out one with 4, and there has been a much more narrow one with 1, but by and large, it's 1 major dominator, 2 minor dominators at Darlington.
Okay. There's the stage racing, of course. So this is the first stage race that we get at Darlington. How do you think that is going to impact what we see and the potential number of dominators?
Yeah, I'm actually kind of struggling to figure this one out a little bit myself, because the 100 laps is certainly more than a fuel window. So they're all going to pit during the first stage. They're all going to pit during the second stage at some point. Obviously, a lot of it could depend on the timing of cautions. We definitely get cautions at Darlington, as I mentioned, because you get some guys who get in the wall of the Darlington stripe. But NASCAR's actually been very good this year about holding the caution, not really throwing it too quickly, which I think was kind of a knock on them in the past. They would, you know, see a driver in the wall and they would just throw the caution. And I didn't really like that, but they've done a lot better, I think, this year. So Darlington, you can get some cautions, but with the extra stages, the extra cautions there, it probably will make it three dominators, I think, more likely than 2. But I don't think it makes it any more likely that we get 4 dominators, because I said 3 is the most prevalent. I still don't think it makes it any more likely that we get 4 dominators. I just think the way racing has gone this year, there really haven't been many races, almost any, that have had 4 dominators at any point. So I'm not looking at a ton of dominators here. I think 3 is probably the most likely outcome still. So I don't think it changes too much for me. I think I'm going to play Darlington like I always do. Pit strategy is not really going to be a major issue in terms of like early stage strategy if the race stays green. Everybody's going to have to pit probably halfway through the stage. Some might take it longer. Some might take it shorter, like we see basically every race. That's a, you know, kind of like a mile and a half, a traditional mile and a half oval. Even though Darlington isn't a traditional mile and a half, it's long enough and the stages are long enough that you'll see normal pit strategies. You're not going to see anything like Pocono because you can't pit and stay on the lead lap. You're not going to see anything like the road courses again because you can't pit and stay on the lead lap. So you'll see traditional pit strategy here during the stages. So I actually don't think it makes it any more likely that we see a 4th dominator. And I also don't necessarily think it makes it any more likely we see only 2 dominators, because, of course, things can happen during these pit stops under caution. They're guaranteeing 2 cautions with these stages. So I don't think it makes it any more likely we see fewer dominators. So I'm still probably going with 1 major dominator and 2 minor dominators as what I think we'll typically see at Darlington.
Interesting. If you had to lean towards 2 or 4, which direction would you be leaning in as an alternative?
I'd still lean towards 2. I don't think there's a huge chance of 4. Just the way the racing has gone this year, when a guy gets out front, he's very often stayed out front. Bristol, you know, 2 weeks ago was an exception, just because it's such a weird race. You had Larson and Busch and Jones all lead, you know, different portions, and even Kenseth and Elliott a little bit at times, not really dominating. But it's just been a year of, you know, really, especially at these 1.5 mile ovals, the cookie cutters. I know that, again, that Darlington is not, but it does bring in some elements of that a little bit. I just think this is a year where there have been fewer dominators than normal. Despite the stage racing, there's been, just a traditional number of dominators or fewer than I've expected at most of the races. So I think we're probably going to see the same thing. I'm going to lean towards 2 if I had to pick one of 2 or 4.
Interesting. A couple of follow-up questions on that. In terms of fewer dominators than what we've traditionally seen, do you think that has something to do with the quality of the drivers themselves? So, for instance, maybe there are a couple drivers who are just having some fantastic seasons, and when they get ahead, they tend to stay ahead. Or do you think it has something to do with any changes in, like, the aerodynamic package or anything like that?
Yeah, I actually think it's the former. I think it's the quality of the drivers. We've had 3 drivers who've just been unreal this year. Truex, Larson, and Kyle Busch, of course, who've just who've been crushing this year. I mean, they've just been crushing. They're easily the three best drivers, and they've led most of, you know, at least one of them has dominated, I think, probably every race. So it's just been a year of just three guys who have just crushed it. And yes, there are drivers who earlier this year have led races. Brad Keselowski comes to mind early on in the season, who led a lot of laps at the mile and a half. Kevin Harvick at times has shown it, but really it's been on the strength of these three drivers. And so you usually get two of these drivers, sometimes three of these drivers leading laps. And occasionally one of them or two of them have a bad day, but one of them still leads a lot of laps. And then maybe one or two other drivers have a chance to lead laps. Very, very few times do you have four guys who are just like crushing it, knocking it out of the park, all contending, swapping back and forth that we've seen this year. So I think it actually has to do with the quality of the drivers more than the aerodynamics. I think the aerodynamics have actually been pretty good. We've seen a lot of passing. Like at Indy, for example, this year, we saw some passing that I haven't seen in the past at Indy. So there have been definitely NASCAR's going in the right direction with a lot of these aerodynamic changes. They're still working on some of the things with the tires. I think they're still going to continue to tweak the aerodynamics because they always want to make racing as competitive as possible. But certainly, I think it's the quality of the drivers that has kept the number of dominators down.
It's interesting. It's almost as if with those three drivers being so dominant, there's not enough market share to go around for the other drivers.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's exactly right. I mean, if you think about like a football team, let's take the Oakland Raiders, for example. You get Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. They take up 50% of the targets on that team. There's not a ton of other targets to go around. You don't really have a third guy that's like a really viable fantasy wide receiver or tight end on that team most of those years that Crabtree and Cooper are together. So it's the same thing in NASCAR. You get these three dominators. There aren't a whole lot of laps led and fastest laps to go around to everybody else. Occasionally there is. Occasionally in a certain race, you might get a player who's start worthy in terms of dominance, like Kevin Harvick or Brad Keselowski or Blaney or somebody. Just like with the Raiders, you might get a Seth Roberts who gets three touchdowns in one game because I have no idea why they threw him at the goal line.
All right, good. That was some good cross-sport conversation there.
Yeah, yeah. We gotta bring in the mainstream non-NASCAR audience there as well. But to me, NASCAR is mainstream.
Yeah. So, okay, let's talk about some of the key statistics that you are looking at to evaluate domination at Darlington.
Yeah, so the key statistics for domination, first of all, what I thought was really interesting was in both the fastest laps and in the laps led, the track type finishing position, so just a steep track finishing position, stood out more than like driver rating or quality pass percentage. I'm not sure if it means anything that it's finishing position versus driver rating, which, you know, is usually more predictive than finishing position. So I'm still trying to like scratch my head a little bit on that one and try to kind of wrap a reason behind that. But it shows up both fastest laps and laps led for the track type finishing position over like the last eight steep track races. The other stats that really show up is year-to-date dominance, of course. So we're going to see the same dominators dominate this race, most likely. Your Truex, Larson, Busch, maybe some Kevin Harvick, Brad Keselowski, or maybe another steep track driver who has a good steep track history. But I think by and large, it's probably going to be the same crew of guys that we're looking at. Starting position, of course, matters. And then for fastest laps, not laps led, but for fastest laps, the final practice time matters as well. And I think that makes a lot of sense. It's the single lap speed in the last practice session of the day. It's going to make a lot of sense that over the course of several Darlington races, the drivers who are fastest in final practice over one lap will pick up fastest laps over one lap at a time at the race. So that's a little extra nugget you can throw in there over lap led. Lap led, you can also tack on the fastest lap and look at final practice as well. But by and large, it's dominators this year and actually track type finish over the last eight steep track races.
Okay, so Darlington, it is a special race for NASCAR because of the unique track, but then also it is the second to last race before the playoffs start. So obviously the playoff picture is going to impact the way that drivers approach the race. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so the playoff picture is pretty, pretty interesting. I think it's, you know, it could go a couple ways, but first and foremost, the drivers that are on the inside, well, so let me take a step back. You qualify for the playoffs if you win a race and you're inside the top 30 in points at the end of the regular season. Well, every driver that's won a race so far is also inside the top 30. And so that's 13 drivers. Well, technically it's 14, but Joey Logano's win got taken away from him because he had an illegal car. So there's 13 drivers who have already qualified for the playoffs on wins. That leaves three drivers on points. And the first three drivers without a win on points are Chase Elliott, Matt Kenseth, and Jamie McMurray. McMurray is 11 points behind Chase Elliott, and Kenseth is 8 points behind Chase Elliott. So pretty close there, but that's okay because they're all on the inside. They're not on the outside looking in. The drivers on the outside looking in, the first two are Clint Bowyer, who is actually quite a bit back of Jamie McMurray. He's 58 points behind Jamie McMurray, which is more than a full race's worth of points just in finishing position. You can also get stage points, so really there's technically up to 60 points available in any given race, but or 63, I guess, if you win as well. But so Bowyer is basically a full race back or more, depending on how you count the stage points or not. And then Joey Logano is even further back. He's had some problems recently. He's the next one on the outside looking in, and he is over 100 points behind Jamie McMurray. So certainly those two are on the outside looking in. After that, it goes Eric Jones, Daniel Suarez, and Trevor Bayne. So those are the first five on the outside looking in. But it's wild. We've got drivers, as we've mentioned this year, Austin Dillon, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Casey Kane, who have won races that don't always win a race every year, especially with Dillon and Stenhouse. These are their first wins this year. Ryan Newman won a race, for example. So we got a lot of drivers who have made the chase by either making the right gambles or having the right car at the right time. So like Stenhouse, of course, the plate races, Dillon and Kane with the right gambles at the right time. So, it's a really interesting situation. And we've got three drivers that I think are on the inside and probably one or two drivers on the outside looking in that I think could still sneak their way in some format.
Okay, but those five drivers, the top five guys you mentioned who are on the outside, although conceivably maybe something could happen where one of them gets in with points, basically they're all looking to win.
I think so. I think they're all looking to win 58 points or whatever it was for Bowyer, 52, 58. I can't remember what I said there.
That'll be hard to make up.
It's very hard to make up in two races, so... he's definitely looking for a win, I would think. Joey Logano is out. I mean, he would have to make up 117 points. So he would need to score the maximum in both races. Right. And Jamie McMurray would have to finish dead last in both races. So he's definitely guaranteed looking for a win.
Yeah.
Obviously, Clint Bowyer is too. And all these other guys are looking for a win. So you're going to see different strategies. I don't know if it's going to be in the first segment. You know, when we talk about dominators early, I don't know if it's going to be in the first segment. You'll see the strategy. The second, third segment. There's going to be a lot of different strategies. I mean, there's 367 laps, a lot of laps, 100 laps, 100 laps, and then 167 for the segments. I think what we'll probably see is gambles taking place, maybe even starting in the second segment, setting them up for a different third segment. So I certainly think we'll see a lot of aggressive strategies, and it's going to be an interesting weekend of racing. I certainly think it gears up towards some GPP shots with some of these drivers.
Who are some of the other drivers that you were expecting to take gambles to pull off a last minute win? I mean, I guess it's basically everyone who's not in, but do you have any more thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably not going to be somebody like Reed Sorensen, so, you know. But no, you're right. I mean, it's anybody with a realistic shot of winning, I think, will probably try to take some kind of different strategy. That's on the outside looking in. So Dale Earnhardt Jr., I think, is a guy who could certainly do that. I think Ty Dillon, Chris Buescher, AJ Allmendinger, Paul Menard probably just won't have it. But they're obviously in the same boat. Danica Patrick, Michael McDowell, et cetera. They're all in the same boat. I just don't think any of those will have this speed. So other than the five guys we mentioned there, Jones, Suarez, Logano, Bowyer, and then Trevor Bayne, I think also we could throw in Dale Earnhardt Jr. And maybe like Paul Menard, Ty Dillon, Chris Buescher, AJ Allmendinger, Danica into the mix. But I think we're probably stretching it there with those drivers, hoping that they'll win. Because barring something weird and wild and random, a fog out coming in or something like that, I don't think we're going to see one of those drivers win. I think Dale Earnhardt Jr. is probably the furthest back that would have a realistic expectation of winning with a gamble.
Okay, so you said the drivers on the safe side are Jamie McMurray, Matt Kenseth, and Chase Elliott. Am I right or no?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So how does that impact their driving strategy? They're trying to get in on points. Do they drive a little more conservatively?
I think you probably just try to avoid wrecking. I don't necessarily think, because they're so far ahead of Bowyer, who's 58 points outside, basically the full race, I don't think you necessarily strategize conservative. I think you drive conservative. I don't think you try to wreck. You know, you don't try to push the envelope with a pass or anything like that. But your strategy doesn't have to be conservative itself, because it's really going to be, unless Clint Bowyer has a good race and you just have an awful race, it's going to be hard for him to make all of that up in two races. Now, I still think you're probably not going to see them take like crazy high risk strategy gambles, but I think certainly you'll see them probably err on the side of caution. But I don't think they're probably too worried about strategy. The main thing they're worried about is not getting involved in a wreck.
Okay. Earlier in the show, we talked a bit about which statistics you are using to find dominators. What about finishing position? What statistics are you consulting there?
Yeah. So I think the statistics there that we're going to look at for finishing position are pretty interesting as well, because one of the things I expected was a lot of steep track stuff like that. But actually, the track type, steep tracks, didn't show up at all in my model, which I thought was weird and kind of bizarre. But Darlington is such a unique track. And so what does show up is the track quality pass percentage. I mentioned we can pass at Darlington. Well, I can't, but the drivers there can. The track quality pass percentage is something we want to look at. So which drivers have a very good quality pass percentage? Let's say like the last, four or six Darlington races. So if you go to the NASCAR splits app and just queue up Darlington, and maybe say since like 2013, since that's when they introduced the Gen 6 car, if you go to quality pass percentage, you'll see Kevin Harvick's number one. Dale Jr. is actually number two. Kurt Busch, number three. So Dale Jr. standing out as number two is pretty interesting, because we know he's going to want to gamble and try to get a win here. And he's definitely in a car that has the potential to do that. So that's certainly an interesting name that we throw out there. There's other statistics as well that factor in year-to-date quality pass percentage. So again, how well have you been passing this year? And it's interesting because it's not driver rating, as we always see. It's pass percentage at this track. So I thought that was a super cool factor. And then there is practice time data that, of course, comes in as well. So the 10-lap average, a little bit of final practice, but it's more geared towards the 10-lap average, which most of the drivers made a 10-lap run in final practice. So those are the statistics I'm really looking at for Darlington this week.
Okay, so you've mentioned how Darlington, it's unique. It's unlike other tracks that we see typically. How predictable is finishing position at Darlington, given that it's really unlike other tracks?
Yeah, so it's a middle of the road type track in terms of predictability. It's certainly not on your Bristol or your Martinsville level in terms of predictability or road courses or restricted plates, all that stuff. But it's also not like your most predictable tracks, like we've seen with Phoenix or some of the 1.5 mile ovals, especially the ones that have lower tire wear. It's more in the like the higher tire wear oval, like 1.5 mile ovals, except it's not a 1.5 mile oval. It's just kind of in that middling range. So of all the races, Darlington is basically smack dab in the middle of predictability. The R-squared is like 0.51. So, 0.5 is a couple races on the less predictable side of the 1.5 mile ovals, and then we get a lot that are 0.52, 55, 58, 60, most of those mile and a half tracks there. So this is basically smack dab in the middle of predictability, and I think it makes a lot of sense because it kind of races like a bigger track, a bigger oval, but it also has its own unique elements and the Darlington stripes and cautions and things like that that give it a little bit of unpredictability. So middle of the road makes a lot of sense.
All right, you mentioned how practice is important. We are recording this on Friday night. Both practice sessions are already over. What are the takeaways from practice?
Yeah, I actually have a couple key takeaways here that I thought were pretty interesting. The first was, if you look at the manufacturers, the first practice session, it went Chevy, Toyota, Ford, 1-2-3. And the second one, Toyota, Ford, Chevy, 1-2-3. So I don't know if there's a manufacturer advantage this week. A lot of times we can see, kind of five or six Toyotas near the top, or five or six Fords near the top, or five or six Chevys near the top. It hasn't really been like that. It's been kind of spread out. So I don't think that it's kind of cool. It's like one of the few weeks I've actually seen this. There's not really a manufacturer advantage, especially at the bigger tracks. I mean, at the smaller tracks, I think you get some of that. But Darlington being a bigger track, it's unusual to see that. That said, one name has certainly stood out in practice, and that is Kyle Larson. He was second best in the 10-lap average in first practice session, and he made his 10-lap run on the first 10 laps. So definitely will have an advantage than going later in the session. So it makes sense because only he and Denny Hamlin had 10-lap runs in the first 10 laps. But if you look at second practice session, Kyle Larson had the best 10-lap average, and that was from lap 20 to 29 of his practice laps. So it was later in the session. And then you get a bunch of guys who went earlier in the session behind him, with Keselowski and Hamlin also up there, who went later in the session. So Larson certainly looks to have the best car. I think Larson is probably the driver to beat this weekend. There's other drivers that kind of stand out as having two very good practice sessions. Hamlin, Harvick, Keselowski, even Kasey Kahne has been in the top 10 in single lap speed in both practice sessions. His 10 lap average in final practice, he didn't even actually make one. So we'll have to kind of judge Kasey Kahne basically off of his first practice 10 lap run, which I don't like doing. And it wasn't very good. So I'm just wondering if he, you know, has a fast car over a single lap speed, but doesn't really have the long run speed. So I think Kasey Kahne could be a bit of a trap this weekend if you're looking at single lap practice speed. So that's kind of what I take away. There's not a dominant manufacturer. There's a handful of cars that have been right near the top in single lap. I mean, even I mentioned Harvick, I mentioned Hamlin, I mentioned Blaney. Blaney's been very good over the 10 lap run. I mentioned Keselowski. He's also been very good over the 10-lap run. So there's certainly some drivers that are popping out in terms of practice times, and we'll have to see where they end up qualifying as well.
Okay, let's talk a little more specifically about some drivers. Obviously, pricing is out right now. Based on what you've seen, who are the drivers that look like values?
Yeah, the first driver to me that looks like a big value, as I mentioned, is Dale Earnhardt Jr. I don't like him for cash games, though, obviously, because he's going to be taking risks. But certainly when he's priced down there at scrolling down 7,600, it's a very good price point for him at a track that has been good to him in the past in terms of quality pass percentage. His average start since 2013 has been 19th. His average finish has been 6.3. So that gives him an average of 58.4 DraftKings points over the last three Darlington races, which is behind only Harvick and Kyle Busch, who have been dominant at this track in terms of Harvick leading an average of 33% of the laps since 2013 per race, and then Kyle Busch leading an average of 18% of the laps per race. So Dale Earnhardt Jr. certainly stands out, and if he's going to qualify a little further back, take some gambles, etc., I think he's a driver that could certainly, you know, pay off in a GPP-type format. I'm not going to use him in cash games, unless obviously he qualifies really far back, then he just becomes a very safe play. But if he qualifies in that 12 to, you know, 20 range, something like that, he's certainly playable in GPPs because of how he's run here in the past and how he's finished. Another driver that I think actually represents a good value is Austin Dillon. And it's a little backwards because he hasn't actually, had great statistics here in the past in terms of the quality pass percentage and stuff that we look at, but he's just been consistent. He started 20th, finished 15th on average over his career at Darlington. Then you add in he's actually had some pretty good practice times. He was 30th in the first practice session, 8th in the second. Obviously, there's a qualifying run there in the second practice session. But his 10-lap run was kind of middle of the pack. So I think he's an okay value. But my biggest takeaway from pricing this week is that it's really sharp. It's one of the sharpest of the whole year in terms of trying to find values. I think there's pretty tough value to find here. Maybe Brad Keselowski down at 9,200 is another nice value, but I think it's probably one of the best priced slates of the whole year that we've seen on DraftKings.
Interesting. And obviously, right, like qualifying is tomorrow, so there, you know, some of this could be subject to change.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I think Austin Dillon, if he qualifies further back, he's a good play. If he qualifies further forward, he's a bad play, despite being maybe a air quote value at a $7,400 price tag.
Sure.
All of this is subject to change with qualifying. But I think just in the early going, the drivers that caught my eye were were Junior Keselowski and Austin Dillon. I think they're probably just maybe all slightly mispriced, but I also kind of have a little bias for Austin Dillon. I feel like I've been using him a lot recently, and I probably still will again this weekend.
All right, and who do you think is overpriced right now?
The first driver that jumps out is Denny Hamlin. He's the fourth highest priced driver, which I actually don't understand, like, at all. Denny Hamlin is, yeah, he's got the fourth best quality pass percentage here, but I don't think DraftKings necessarily put a quality pass percentage variable into their model of pricing. But, you know, that statistic is very good for him. But Denny Hamlin is just not a dominant driver this year. He really hasn't dominated this year. In Darlington in the past, he has the fifth most laps led since 2013, but it's only average of 5% laps per race. So it's not really actually, he doesn't even count as a dominator. Like, if somebody leads 5% of the laps, we're not going to count them as a dominator at Darlington. So I think he's just overpriced here for what he can do. If we look at just the quality pass percentage statistic, Clint Bowyer's down there at 27.6. He's still kind of priced up at 8,400. He is one of those drivers that is going to gamble, but he also hasn't shown a ton of speed in practice, 14th and 17th in his single lap average. You look over at his 10 lap average as well. It was in the back half of the top 10, and it was later in the session. So that could portray some good things there for Bowyer. But it, just in general, this hasn't been one of his best tracks. So I'm looking at Bowyer overpriced. I'm looking at Hamlin overpriced. Other than that, though, it's pretty hard to find some drivers that might be overpriced. Maybe you could say Eric Jones because he's now priced up as the, I think it's the 10th highest driver. Yeah, 10th highest driver there at 8,800. I'm not so sure if Eric Jones is going to be a top 10 driver at his first race at Darlington with no track history. He didn't practice inside the top 10. And of course, I don't really want to get into practice because of the fact that we're just talking pure price before, you know, just going into the weekend, but even looking at his practice, I think he's also overpriced as well. So maybe Bowyer, maybe Eric Jones, and definitely Denny Hamlin for me.
Okay. I have a random question here. People don't know this, but I do a lot of really intense NASCAR research. And over the bye week, I saw that NASCAR was floating the idea of a choose cone. Now, obviously, I really know what that is, but can you tell the people who don't know what that is what a choose cone is?
Yeah, so this is actually kind of a cool thing that was popping up a little bit on SiriusXM NASCAR Radio, Channel 90, and that commercial stuck in my head. But no, the choose cone is something that's been used in some of the local NASCAR series. So NASCAR has three national series, the Cup Series, the Xfinity Series, and the Truck Series. But some of the local series have used a choose cone in the past. And what it is under a caution, somebody will run out to one side of the track and put a cone, plop it down in the middle of the track, and cars will have to choose which side of the cone they go on for the restart. So if you're coming up the cone, you can either choose the inside or you can choose the outside. And that will determine where you start on the restart. And the reason it's different than just saying, okay, well, all the drivers on the odd numbers start on the outside, or on the inside, and all the even numbers start on the outside, except the leader can choose inside or outside. The reason it's different is because, let's say we're at a place like Bristol, where the outside is a very obvious better place to restart. Then even if you're in second, you know, let's say the leader chooses the outside, even if you're in second place, instead of choosing the inside starting next to the leader, you might still choose the outside so you don't lose second position to the guy in third place, because most likely that outside lane will get the better run and you'll go from second to third or fourth or fifth. So it brings in an element of strategy where you have to choose the inside lane or the outside lane for every driver through the field, instead of just the leader choosing the inside or the outside. So just a little bit added element of strategy. You know, obviously a place like Martinsville, drivers would want to be choosing the inside more often. But there's this point where, like, maybe the first three or four guys choose the outside, then you want to choose the inside because, you know, it's an advantage to still start in that front row. You're probably not going to lose four or five spots. You might lose one or two. So then at some point, you know, at Bristol, for example, you'd choose the inside and you know, leapfrog three or four cars that way. So it brings an extra element of strategy on restarts. Once everybody's made the choice, they pull the cone off the track and then they give the restart. So it certainly would bring a twist to restarts in NASCAR.
It's interesting. I think anything that adds strategy to a sport is a good thing, but what do you think about the choose cone?
I think it would be awesome. I think drivers that have put themselves in that position to be higher up in the order should not be disadvantaged by random chance of being second or third, right? Like, I mean, second or third, there is a little bit of a difference in terms of position, right? The second place guy is running ahead of the third place guy. But the second place guy shouldn't be so disadvantaged that he falls to fifth or sixth or something like that on a restart because of pure luck of when the caution came out. So I like the choose cone. Not only does it reward drivers being further forward, but it also brings in that strategy element, as you mentioned, and anything that can add strategy, make it more intriguing, I think is good. Maybe other than the stages, I'm still not sure I'm in love with these stages, but of course, you know, if I can support a choose cone, I guess I kind of have to support the stages as well, because it doesn't really make sense to support one and not the other. So maybe I'll eventually come around to these stages.
Mm-hmm. Well, they seem a little bit different to me, but yeah, I don't know. I think change is generally good, and if you don't like it, you can always revert back. Okay, Nick, we are nearing the end of the show. Who is your way too early pick to win the race?
So I think the obvious answer right now is Kyle Larson. Best car by far in practice, I think, in terms of the long run speed. He certainly, if you just look at his single lap speed, it doesn't look as good. But I don't care about single lap speed here. I mean, it was first in practice one. In practice two, he did not make a qualifying trim run. So it looks slower, but that's because a lot of other guys made their qualifying trim runs. So Larson, I think, is the clear pick to win, but this is the fourth major, and look what's happened at the three other majors. Kurt Busch won the first major of the year, the Daytona 500. Second major of the year, the Coca-Cola 600, Austin Dillon won. Third major of the year, the Brickyard 400 there, Casey Kane won. So it's not been all of our household names that have won these races. So maybe a non-household name wins. And, well, of all the non-household names this year, it's probably the most household name. Dale Earnhardt Jr. will be my pick to win the race.
Okay. It's good for him to win the race. That gets him into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it would be something if Dale Earnhardt Jr. made the playoffs in his final year. I mean, we had the whole Jeff Gordon thing, made the playoffs, got a win in the playoffs. We had the whole Tony Stewart win to get in the playoffs. So maybe it's Dale's turn to win one and make the playoffs in his final year.
Yeah, it would be nice to see him in the playoffs. So, okay, any final thoughts? When are we going to see RotoViz Live this week?
So RotoViz Live is still in a state of flux. And the reason is it's Labor Day weekend. My brother and sister-in-law are flying into town. So going to be juggling schedule just a little bit, but I'll definitely tweet it out with plenty of advance notice when we figure out schedules. Not sure when we're going to go down to the strip and be degenerates and things like that here in Vegas, but we'll figure it out. Follow me on Twitter at RotoDoc. I will definitely post it when we talk about it and figure out our schedule. And we'll definitely do the whole standard RotoViz Live, 30 minutes to an hour long show, depending on how many questions we get. Hashtag RV Live on Twitter to ask questions. And I look forward to seeing you all there.
All right. That is going to do it for this NASCAR edition of On the Daily. For Nick Giffen on Twitter at RotoDoc, I'm Matt Friedman. Matt F. The Oracle, thanks for tuning in. Thank you for listening to On the Daily, the RotoViz Daily Fantasy Sports Podcast, powered by RotoViz Radio. And special thanks to Randy E. Aguibo for the introduction. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the established RotoViz Radio feed. Contact us via email onthedailydfs@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @onthedailydfs.